Well, good morning. Hope everybody is doing well. Before we get into the message today, if you have never downloaded the LifePoint app, I want you to grab your smartphone and go ahead and do that. We're going to use that later on in the message. You just go to your app store and search keyword LifePoint Ohio. There should be a blue icon there for you to download. Like I said, we'll use that later on in the message. For the past few weeks, we have been in a series called Grasp Your Next Step. And the idea for the series is that you cannot follow by standing still, that God has next steps for all of us to take. And so we've called them kind of the spiritual must-haves of 2018. And so the idea for us looking at what our core values are as a church, we talk about them like five fingers on a hand. We use the acronym GRASP. And so we started the series off by talking about gospel identity. And then last week we talked about reaching priorities. We talked about being salt and light. And that leads us to the A of GRASP, which is authentic community. And authentic community means that, that we are designed for connection rather than isolation. Maybe a more simple way to say that to you is that we are better together. Whenever our oldest daughter, Sydney, whenever she was in the fourth grade, I remember one night she had a one-page paper due, and she had forgotten about doing the paper till a little bit too late. And so here we are, it's 8:30, 9 o'clock, and we're just starting on what for a fourth grader, it's kind of a big deal, a one-page paper. And so it's getting a little bit, just a little bit tense. But never fear, I developed a genius method of helping my children with their homework. And you may, if you have kids, this will help you out. What you do is you give them a little bit of wisdom. You tell them something to do. Then you just walk out of the room. You count to 30 or so. You walk back into the room and check on whether or not your children have applied said wisdom that you just offered them 30 seconds or so earlier. It was a wonderful method. So after about, felt like 45 minutes of much weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth, we had two sentences down. That's all we had down on this paper. So it's kind of getting tight. But now the beauty of these two sentences is that the last sentence just rolled onto the next line with one word. So just one word on that line, and there was a whole blank space, wonderful blank space after that. So I said to Sydney, I said, well, why don't you start a new paragraph? And all of a sudden, she went from struggling to write to becoming a Longfellow. She said, but Dad, I have more to say. And I'm like, well, honey, that's okay. Just say it in a new paragraph. Just start a new paragraph. And she thought for a minute, and she said, Dad, are you just trying to get me to waste a whole line of space on this one-page paper? She says, Dad, that wouldn't be doing my best. You've always told me to do my best. And that's what Jesus wants me to do, is to do my best. Right, Dad? You're bringing the Lord into this. Thank you very much, right? And the reality is that we are better when we are together. And to help us think that through, if I could say it this way, maybe it's the best way to say it. When we are together, what we do is we bring the Lord into stuff. And that's what we need. So Jesus had a plan. We're going to call it the team plan, okay? I know today is Championship Sunday, right, for the both conferences of the NFL. And so when you think about a big football team, it's really broken down into smaller teams. You've got the coach and the coordinators and the assistant coaches and that group. And you've got the administrators and the GM, and you've got that whole group. And then you've got the players. And the players are broken down into offense, defense, and special teams. So all week, you've got all these smaller teams, all these smaller groups that they're meeting, so that whenever they show up on Sunday in the large group, they perform at their highest level. When you think about a church, it's kind of the same. You come in here on Sunday, and the group is a little larger, right, than you are able to connect with personally. But we have what are called life groups. And today, we're launching a brand new term of groups. And so I'm going to encourage you today to take the step of getting involved with one of those smaller groups, because everybody needs a team and everybody needs to become a good teammate. Now, some of you are going to push back on me and you're going to say, Dean, that's not me. I don't need anybody. And I know one of the mantras of Western society is if you want something done right, you got to do it right. And there's a lot of us who think, listen, I'm going to become a Christian. I want to do it myself. And reality is that God has designed authentic community, us doing life together to be, it's how we grow as Christians. Now, it's not the only way we grow as Christians, but it's a big part of how we grow as Christians. And for those of us who think we're a little bit independent and we think, I don't need that. Think about it this way. When God comes to create the world, he creates the world. He creates the Garden of Eden. Then at the end of that process, he brings us into it. And what do? We wreck it, right? We mess everything up that he's done. So when he comes back the second time in the person of Jesus to the earth, what would you expect God to do? You would expect God to do it himself. You would expect him to completely leave us out of the plan, right? But it's exactly the opposite. Luke chapter 6 tells us about the people, or the team, if you will, that Jesus chose. And when day came, he being Jesus, he called his disciples and chose from them 12, whom he named apostles. Simon, whom he named Peter, Andrew his brother, and James and John, and Philip and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon, who was called the Zealot. Now, there were at least three groups of people that Jesus engaged on a regular basis in Hebrew culture. So let's talk about all three of them real quick. First, there were the mercenaries. In their culture, there was a group of people, nationalist Hebrews, that were kind of like freedom fighters. They were like guerrilla warfare. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to oust Rome and Roman domination of Israel by any means necessary. They would do whatever it takes. Matter of fact, their favorite method of assassination, when they would try to assassinate a Roman leader or a Roman soldier, was to slit their throat while they were sleeping. It's what they were known for. This group of people, they were called the Zealots. That was their political faction. People in their culture would feel about the Zealots like we would feel about Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or somebody like that. You will notice when I read the list of people that Jesus chose to you, he chose a zealot. He chose one of these guys to be part of the group. Those are the first group. The second group, we'll call them the monks, okay? There was a group of people, they called themselves the Essenes, and they were very holy. They took the law very, very seriously. So they didn't want to have anything unclean. They didn't want to touch anything unclean. So they actually moved away from the cities. They moved out by the Dead Sea where no one lived. And they kind of lived monastically. They became monks out there. Society was corrupt. They didn't want to be touched, bothered by society. So they move out here. They live quietly, monastically, all by themselves. They believe themselves to be so holy that before they eat every meal, they took a ritualistic bath so that they could be clean before anything entered their body. They were so austere and lofty in their views that they would not use the restroom on the Sabbath. They held it all day because they didn't want to do anything unclean on the Sabbath. That's how they viewed themselves. So they kind of had a superiority complex. They looked down their noses kind of at everybody else because of how they lived life and how they were unclean and how they didn't follow the rules. Now, the Pharisees were a different group, but they kind of fit into this category. Very rule-oriented, we're kind of better than you. That's mercenaries and monks. The third group is a group we'll call the Medians. The largest group that represented them in Hebrew culture were called the Sadducees. They didn't believe in heaven or the afterlife or angels. They were very secular. Secular is a Latin word that means now. They believe whatever happens now is most important. So the Sadducees found themselves working with Rome against their own people. They were collaborators. Whatever Rome needed, the Sadducees would find a way to make that happen. They'd find a way to do that. And they profited from Rome against their own people. An example of that would be tax collecting. And you notice from Jesus's group that he chose Matthew. Matthew was a tax collector who worked for Rome against his own countrymen, against his own people. So you look at that group. So you've got in Jesus's choice. He chooses a zealot. Later on, he chooses Nicodemus, who was a Pharisee. He chooses one of those holy, law-keeping, kind of legalistic kind of people. And then lastly, he would have chosen Matthew, a hated tax collector. I guess the reason I'm saying all this is to say, I think that the relationship among the disciples was not always smooth. I think there was probably a lot of friction between the members of their group. They had different views. They had different values. Can you imagine one night when Jesus says, "Hey, Matthew, you're going to room with Simon tonight. You guys are going to sleep in the same room." And can you imagine Matthew all night, like he's got a big scarf wrapped around his neck because he wonders, is the zealot going to take this opportunity to slit his throat? There were times when, well, it wasn't even just them. There were things that Jesus taught. I'll give you a couple of examples. Matthew chapter 5, verse 51. Jesus said, "If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. And there was a law, a Roman law in their culture, that if a Roman soldier asked you to carry his gear or to carry his pack, you were obligated to carry it at least 1 mile. You didn't have a choice. It was a law. Can you imagine how humiliating it would have been for a zealot to be compelled to carry the pack of a Roman, never mind what that Roman soldier may or may not have done to his family members or to people that he knows, how much he would have had to humble himself, that zealot, to carry that Roman soldier's pack or gear for a mile. Jesus says, listen, if he asks you for 1 mile, give him 2. Can you imagine how that would have felt to someone who held those political views? Or how about in Matthew chapter 8, it says this, "And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, if you will, you can make me clean.' And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, 'I will, be clean.' And immediately his leprosy was cleansed." Now, can you imagine for the folks who are listening to Jesus, or even the apostles who are with Jesus, this leper comes, and I imagine, I mean, all of the Pharisaical, legalistic, holy types were like, "Oh, wow, what are we gonna do? How do we get out of here?" And Jesus reaches out and he touches the guy. And he does it in order. He doesn't heal him, then touch him. He touches him, and then he heals him. The Pharisees would have been whipping out the hand sanitizer as fast as they can, right? Right, because they wouldn't want to touch somebody. They wouldn't want to be unclean like that. Or what about when Jesus says, "He who is not with me is against me"? In other words, to the collaborators, right? To the Sadducees. To the ones who say, "Well, I'll ride the fence on this side, or I'll ride the fence on that side." Doesn't make sense. Jesus says, no, "He who's not with me is against me." Pick a side. You gotta make a choice. All of the time, one another, I see these guys as kind of like sandpaper to each other. And a lot of you know exactly where I'm headed, right, with the context of the message. You and I, we need to be part of a team. We need to be part of a group. And some of you are gonna say to me, "Dean, I know, but I'm like John Wayne, right? Like John Wayne Christian. I don't need anybody." And the truth is, Dean, I just don't like people. If I want to say it out loud, we're not allowed, Christians can't say that out loud. I just don't like people. Let me tell you one of the dirty little secrets of Christianity that probably nobody else will tell you. Whenever you show up here on Sundays and you meet people, there's a great likelihood that there are people in this room who are really going to annoy you. It's just true. There are people in this room that don't have the same political views that you do. Maybe they talk too loud or too long. And to you, to your personality, man, they are just like sandpaper. And it is just friction to you. I've got a friend who teaches and he calls them extra grace required. He said certain people to you are just like, it takes a little extra grace on your part to spend time around them and to spend time with them. And I would just say that God uses those people in our lives for good. Listen, how else are you gonna knock the rough edges of your heart off? How else are you gonna learn patience without God using other people in your lives to shape you? We're better together. And when we get together and there is tension at times, we bring the Lord into it. Think about it this way. Our staff team, I don't know, it's 4 or 5 years ago, we were traveling to go do something. So we went out to get into what then our old church van to go. And we turned the van on, and we were completely out of gas. So we thought, well, somebody had used the van and didn't fill it back up, and so we can't use the van. So we used to have this old little minibus. So we all jumped in the minibus, and we were kind of laughing. We were going to take the minibus. We turned the minibus on. What do we find out? There's no gas in the minibus. And all of a sudden, it became clear to us that someone had come along, and they had siphoned all of the gas out of the church van and out of the bus to steal it. Now listen, you gotta be pretty gutsy, right, to steal gas from God, right? I mean, you gotta, like, I'd like to meet that man or that woman, right, who did that. But I was thinking about that this week, and I was thinking, you know, reality is there are certain people that you're gonna spend time around, and you're gonna walk away from spending time with them, and you're gonna feel refreshed. You're gonna feel renewed. You're gonna be happy. Like, they fill your tank up. That's what they do. They kind of breathe life into you. And then there are other people that you're gonna spend time around, and it's gonna be like they just siphon, like they just suck the life right out of you when you are done being with, and don't point. You don't have to do that. Don't give me that, right? I understand. They're just gonna be people who are gonna be, they're gonna be that way. And maybe you say, well, listen, I'm not gonna say it out loud, but I don't have anybody like that in my group. Like, our group's perfect. Like, everybody, I like everybody. It's probably you. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. That's not what that means. Not at all with me. But that's the way it works. And God uses those people in our lives. Maybe I can say it to you this way. I'm going to show you a picture up here. A fairly well-known person. Anybody know who that is? Anybody? That is Sarah Blakely. And she's kind of famous. She's actually a very well-known inventor in the United States because about 20 years ago now, Sarah Blakely invented Spanx. Yeah, good job. We know. She invented Spanx. For all you guys who don't know what Spanx is, ladies, turn and tell them what Spanx is so they'll figure it out, right? Actually, that's not true. You know, Sarah Blakely today, she has, and by the way, Spanx are like the modern day version of the girdle, right? So she has, I think the Spanx are sold in over 12,000 stores worldwide, in over 40 countries. She's sold over 7 million. She's a billionaire, by the way, because in 1999, she was going to a dinner party, and she wanted to go out and buy control top pantyhose without the pantyhose, and she couldn't find them. She takes $5,000. She goes out, she invents the product, and she's had this crazy success. She actually has over 200 different products in the Spanx line. One of them is actually for men. I'll show you a picture of it up here. It's called Manx. And if you guys, you know, you're getting a little heavy around your midsection and you want a Manx will actually cut about an inch and a half off of the look of your, not that I use the product or anything, I don't want you. Or maybe I do use the product. No, just kidding. Listen, why has she been so successful? Why all of this wild, crazy product value? And because Sarah Blakely can hide what nobody else can. And I was thinking about that this week. You know, there's a lot of us that live out Spanx Christianity. We roll in here on Sundays and we pretend like everything is fine and we don't need anybody else. And you've got that little marriage problem. You're saying, I'm just going to tuck that right in here. Nobody will ever notice. Nobody will ever see. Or maybe you've got that anger issue that's been plaguing you and you've been hurting other people with your words most of your life. And you just kind of tuck it in there and pretend like that doesn't exist. Nobody can see that. But you know, the reality is there's no healing in hiding. That is why God has given us one another. You know, this week at our men's life group, or the men's life group that I'm part of, our life group leader looked at us to start off the discussion time, and he said, "Hey, tell me what's your greatest fear." And I got to tell you, for 20 seconds, or at least it felt like that long, it was real quiet. Like all of us were looking at each other, like we're actually gonna say these things out. And they weren't just, you know, common every day. And we went around and man by man by man by man, we talked about what our greatest fears were. And I got to tell you, leaving there that day, later on, I thought, you know what? I needed that. I need that because I've been praying about it the rest of the week. I needed to say that out loud. And so what God did is he used the other men in my group and my leader to bring that out of me. We were better together. That probably does not happen outside of my group. Everybody needs a team. Now, one of the great things about being a pastor is that I get to hear people's spiritual stories. Whenever I get to meet people and we'll start to talk, I'll ask them, well, hey, how did you come to know Christ? How did your Christian journey start, if they are a Christian? And, you know, there's a variety of ways that, you know, there's a lot of people say, well, you know what? Growing up, I didn't go to church, blah, 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 blah. Or sometimes people say, you know, I grew up, I did go to church. I just didn't get the message. Or for a lot of people, they'll say, well, you know what? I was in college. And so the stories start very different. But after about 2 minutes, almost all of the stories are the same. They almost always come to this point of, and then I met, and you fill in the blank. And then I met so-and-so, and they invited me to church for the first time. Or then I met so-and-so, and even though they went to church and I went to church, they were loving Christ and I had nothing, no idea how to do that. And they showed me. Or they said, well, you know, I was in college and then I met this person and they invited me to a group or they invited me to church. And that's where I met Christ. And almost always there's a somebody story. I would bet for 90% of the people in the room today, if I ask you, who was that somebody that helped you come closer to Christ? Or who was that somebody that was critical for you in your life? For you to grow, you know their name right now. As a matter of fact, let's just say their names together. First name, and I'm gonna count to three, and we're gonna say their names out loud on three. Ready? One, two, three. Listen to the names of all those people. And I bet for some of you, your somebody is sitting in this room. They're one section over, two sections over, they're sitting in the back. You know, I've been blessed. I've got a lot of somebodies in my life. But when I look back to some of my earliest days as a believer, a somebody in my life was a guy named Jeff. He was about 8 to 10 years older than me. He was married. He had kids. But he, for whatever reason, prompted by God, took an interest in me. And he would come and pick me up sometimes, and he would drive me over to Cerrito Canova, West Virginia, and take me to Everoni's Pizza. And we would sit and we would eat pizza, and he would tell me about what God was doing in his life. And then he would ask me about my life, and he would ask me stuff that nobody else asked me. He would ask me about my relationship with my girlfriend and how that was going and what was going on there. He took the opportunity to become spiritually vested in me. He would come to some of my ball games and he would video some of my ball games and then give me the videos afterwards so that I could watch him or have him or keep. He didn't have any, I mean, he's got a life. He's got other stuff going on. He doesn't. But he was a somebody to me. And you know, the unique way that God weaves our lives together, you know, Jeff and I have been able to stay in contact, and not just stay in contact, but to work together. You know, Pastor Jeff, our administrative pastor here at LifePoint, that's him. He was a somebody in my life. Now, probably what you're thinking, or what you could be thinking, I guess, right now, is you're thinking, oh, I see what you mean. I need to go to a group so that I can have a somebody. So somebody can, no. You need to go to a group so that you can become a somebody to somebody else. It's high time for a lot of us to become Jeffs to other people. To take, and you're like, well, Dean, I've got to be an expert. No, you don't. You just share with somebody what's been shared with you. And you do what? You help them take the next step. And for a lot of you, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to have a seminary degree. You don't have to. All you have to do is help people take another step in their relationship with us. You can become a somebody to somebody else. Now, as you think about the big picture view of today, you start to think about Well, just like there were three groups of people in Jesus' day, we've got a variety of people who are sitting in this room. And all of us need to take next steps. Jesus says that the way we do that is through the team plan, that we're better together. It's not the only way you grow, but if you don't have a team, if you don't have a group, you're gonna short circuit your opportunity to come to know Christ. You're gonna live out some bored version of Christianity, some Spanx Christianity that's less than the real thing. And you'll be frustrated and confused, and you'll feel stale and dry because it's not the kind of Christianity that God designed. Listen, God could have done this whole thing by himself. But instead, God sent his one and only son, his one and only son, to come and to give his life, to ransom us, to pay for our sins. And so what we're gonna do now is we're gonna take this opportunity as our band comes to sing back to God in worship, because God has given us the opportunity for community. Not just community with one another, but in Jesus coming and giving his life for us, what he essentially has done is he's given you and I the opportunity to experience heavenly community. Without Jesus, you and I, the scriptures say, are dead in our trespasses and sins. But Jesus has made a way for us to God so that we can live in authentic community, not only with each other, but authentic community with him. Would you stand with us? We're going to sing.